Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to cut through the noise, get you informed, fast. Today we're tackling momentum and collisions. Think of it as a shortcut, really, to understanding the basic rules of how things move, push each other, crash. We've looked at sources covering classical mechanics. They use terms like quantità di moto, impulso, urti. But, you know, to keep things clear, we'll stick to the English. Momentum, impulse, and collisions. The goal. Pull out the key insights.
Yeah, and it's important to get that these aren't just like textbook ideas. They're really vital concepts.
Yeah.
They help simplify some super complex interactions. And honestly, they explain stuff happening all around us. Everything from, I know, billiard ball scattering to how rockets actually get off the ground.
Okay, let's unpack momentum first then. Our sources define it as this key measure of motion. And it's vector, right? It has magnitude and direction. They talk about it for like a single point particle or the total momentum for a whole system. Why is that direction part so important?
Well, what's fascinating there is that the direction is just as crucial as the sheer amount of motion, the oomph, if you will. It's why a tiny, super fast bullet can have similar momentum and therefore impact as a big, slow truck. And understanding that leads straight to the conservation of momentum. Basically, if you have an isolated system, so no outside force is messing with it, the total momentum just stays the same. It doesn't change. It's a really fundamental conservation law. Think of Newton's cradle, that desk toy.
Oh, yeah, the click-clack thing.
Exactly. The last ball swings out with pretty much the exact same momentum as the first one that hit it. That's conservation in action.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, here's where I think it gets really interesting. Impulse. The sources talk about it as a force acting over time. So it's not just how strong the push is, but for how long it pushes. Can you maybe give an example where that distinction really matters?
Absolutely. So the impulse theorem is the direct link here. It connects impulse directly to the change in momentum. And it shows, like you said, it's not just the force strength, but how long it acts. That's critical. Think about airbags in cars. Why do they work?
They cushion the blow.
Right. But how? They stretch out the time of impact, maybe just by milliseconds, but that's enough. It dramatically reduces the peak force your body experiences, even though the total change in your momentum is the same crash momentum.
Yep.
It makes the force less crushing. Same idea with, say, hitting a baseball. A huge force, but over a tiny, tiny fraction of a second.
Creates a massive change in the ball's momentum. Sends it flying.
Precisely. And even if the force isn't constant, if it varies, well, you just add up all the tiny bits of force over the total time. It's like calculating distance when your speed changes. You use calculus and integral for that.
Got it. So if impulse is force over time changing momentum, what happens when things actually, you know, collide? That's the practical side, right?
Exactly. Collisions are where you see momentum and impulse applied, and they come in different types. The sources highlight completely inelastic collisions. That's where things hit and stick together. Think of two train cars coupling. Then you have elastic collisions. Here, objects bounce off each other, ideally with no kinetic energy lost. Billiard balls are the classic example. They're not perfectly elastic in reality. There are also, you know, oblique collisions, glancing blows, not head-on, or collisions happening on a flat surface. But the key takeaway, in all these collision types, momentum is conserved. That's the bedrock principle. The main difference between inelastic and elastic usually boils down to energy, how much gets turned into heat or sound or deformation when they hit.
Okay, moving beyond just the objects hitting, we also need to touch on the center of mass. Sources define this as like the average position of all the mass in a system, whether it's particles or a whole solid object. Why is that idea useful?
The center of mass is super useful because it simplifies things a lot. If there are no external forces acting on the system, the center of mass just moves along at a constant velocity, like one single point representing the whole system's overall motion. But if there is a net external force, well, that force dictates how the center of mass accelerates. It ties right back to the impulse theorem, but applied to the whole system. It's crucial in, say, gymnastics. Where does the athlete's center of mass go? Or designing cars for stability.
Right. And this all leads to some amazing real-world stuff, like reaction propulsion, rockets. A rocket literally throws mass, the exhaust gas, backwards at super high speed.
And that creates a recoil. The rocket pushes the gas back, and the gas pushes the rocket forward. It's a perfect and incredibly powerful example of momentum conservation. The rocket gains forward momentum precisely because the exhaust gained backward momentum, and it doesn't need anything external, like air, to push against. That's why rockets work in space.
So quite a journey then from momentum as a basic measure of motion through impulse as force over time to collisions and how systems move with their center of mass. Hopefully that gives you some new insights into the forces and movements shaping, well, everything around you. What stood out to you?
And maybe connecting this to the bigger picture, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? How might really understanding momentum and collisions change how you see the world? Every interaction, from just pushing a door open to watching a car crash. How do you perceive those dynamic events differently now? Something to think about.